American Giant makes great clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, and more, right here in the U.S. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
Welcome to The World Shapers, conversations with authors about their latest books. I'm your host, Edward Willett, and this episode's guest, Kristen Ciccarelli, talking about her latest book, Heartless Hunter.
Welcome to another episode of The World Shapers, the podcast where I talk to other authors about their latest books. My name is Edward Willett. I'm your host, and I am myself an author of, more than 60 books, I think. 20 or so novels and a whole lot more nonfiction. A lot of it's short, just to, you know, don't want to brag too much, but I have written a lot of books. My latest novel is The Tangled Stars. This came out from Daw Books in ebook and audiobook in 2022, late 2022. It's a far future outer space adventure featuring an AI uplifted talking cat who becomes a starship captain. Which you may be enough information to tell you. It's a humorous novel in many ways, although it has lots of great science fiction adventure in it as well. I highly recommend you check that out, The Tangled Stars from Daw Books by Edward Willett. Now, I also have a publishing company. My publishing company is called Shadowpaw Press, and it's named after our cat, Shadowpaw. And I have a lot of things happening at Shadowpaw Press World Headquarters, which is actually where I am right now. The first one I want to mention is the Kickstarter that is currently running. It just launched. It's a Kickstarter to raise $12,000 for Shapers of Worlds Volume 5. Shapers of Worlds Volume 4 just came out, and all of the Shapers of Worlds books are anthologies of science fiction and fantasy by authors who were guests of this podcast, The World Shapers. So if I happen to have it right here, if I hold this up, that's Shapers of Worlds Volume 4. That's the one that just came out. It has people in it like Sherilyn Kenyon and Michael Brent Colling, Jean-Louis Trudel. Just a great collection of fiction, illustrated as well by Calgary artist Wendy Nordell, who will also be illustrating Shapers of Worlds Volume 5. If the Kickstarter succeeds, it also has lots of great authors in it. And if you go to, you can go to shadowpawpress.com, you'll see a link to it. Or you can use tinyurl.com/shapersofworlds5. That will take you there as well. And if you kick in, there are lots of great backers rewards to choose from, including signed books and ebook packages and opportunities to chat with authors online and some mentoring packages and all that sort of thing. So please check out Shapers of Worlds Volume 5, either at tinyurl.com/shapersofworlds5, or go to Kickstarter, look it up, or go to shadowpawpress.com and find the link there. You'll also see there's another crowdsourcing campaign running at the same time to support this spring-summer's releases from Shadowpaw Press. That's on Crowdfunder, and you can find a link for that. And there's more great reward packages to choose from there as well if you choose to support Shadowpaw Press, which I hope you will. Best way to support Shadowpaw Press is to buy books. And I have published, in addition to Shapers of Worlds Volume 4, already this year, Shadowpaw Press has published... Dun-dun-dun. This is The Good Soldier. Get it turned right. There we go. The Good Soldier by Nir Yaniv. This is military science fiction satire. So it's set in a world that's somewhat like the world of Starship Troopers, powered armor infantry types, but it's also not. It's kind of MASH meets Starship Troopers, or Catch-22 meets Starship Troopers in outer space or something like that. Highly recommend it. It had a good review in Publishers Weekly. It was in New and Notable List and Locus just recently for the current issue. So check that one out. I would also draw your attention to this one, which is The Headmasters by Mark Morton, a Canadian author. This is a young adult science fiction dystopian novel set a few years in the future. Something goes horribly wrong at a research facility in Northern Ontario, and alien parasites come through and attach themselves to everybody. You hate it when that happens. And this is what happens actually a couple of generations after that, as a young girl begins to discover that she might be able to push back against these things. Then coming up in May, I have two very exciting books coming out. There'll be a launch at the Calgary Public Library on May 7th for both of them concurrently. First one is this one. It's The Downloaded by a name you may recognize, Robert J. Sawyer. This was just out as an Audible original audiobook with an A-list cast starring Brendan Fraser. But equally talented people around him as well. So the downloaded, and that launches May 7th in print from Shadowpaw Press. And then that same night, at that same event in Calgary, we will launch The Traitor's Son. Get my hand out of the way of the author's name there. Dave, unfortunately, is no longer with us. He died in 2018. He was awaiting edits on this book when he died. It was edited by Dr. Robert Runday from the University of Lethbridge. And there's going to be two Dave Duncan books coming out posthumously from Shadowpaw Press this year. And this is the first one, The Traitor's Son, science fiction set on a colony world where things are going really badly. So again, watch for those on May 7th. And that'll still be in just before the Kickstarter ends. So please think of both the books that are coming out in that Kickstarter as you think about Shadowpaw Press, which I hope you will. Okay, well, that's a lot of blather about me. So let's get on to this episode's guest, Kristen Ciccarelli. Although it is interesting that the book we're talking about, Heartless Hunter, had a joint book launch with Mark Morton's The Headmasters not that long ago in Waterloo. So there's a connection there. And in fact, that's how Kristen kind of suggested herself to me as a guest. She didn't suggest me, but that's what made me think of having her on as a guest. So we'll meet her, and let me just put on my glasses so I can read it. Kristen Ciccarelli is a New York Times bestselling author whose books have been translated into over a dozen languages. She's the author of Heartless Hunter, which is book one in the Crimson Moth duology. We talked a little bit about that. Edgewood, and the internationally bestselling Is Scary series. Before writing books for a living, she dropped out of college and worked as a baker, a potter, a bookseller, and an NGO worker. She currently resides in the Niagara region of Ontario with her husband and toddler. So that's Kristen, and let's talk to her now. So Kristen, welcome to the World Shapers.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, I'm always looking for connections. We have one. We're both Canadian, so there is that. Yes. But then, of course, one reason that you came to my attention was because you had a joint book launch for the book we're going to be talking about, The Heartless Hunter. No the on there, just Heartless Hunter, along with Mark Morton, who's an author I've interviewed and also happens to be somebody I published his book. So, yes. So that's kind of our connection. How did that go anyway?
It was great. I had so much fun that night. Actually, I had like a horrible headache. So I was a little worried about how it would go, but it was like, Mark was great. Our moderator, Jeff, was great. It was just, I had so much fun.
Oh, yeah. Good. I'm glad it all worked out. Yeah. Well, I'm going to start by go back into the mists of time to see how this all began for you. For me, the mists of time are getting further and further back. But so how did you, well, first of all, where did you grow up, and what else have you done, and education and all that good stuff? And how did this all turn into a writing career?
Sure. So I grew up on a grape farm, my grandfather's grape farm in the Niagara region of Ontario. And it was kind of a strange upbringing. It was like my grandparents, my mom, my aunts and uncles, my cousins, we all lived on the same, farm. And, so I ended up very close with my cousins, playing with my cousins. We would, when we were kids, we weren't allowed to watch too much TV. So we constantly got kicked out of the house. So we had to like make our own fun. And one of the ways that I made my own fun, along with my closest cousin in age was, we wrote stories just to kind of entertain ourselves. So that's kind of where it started. So I don't even remember, like, I think maybe my earliest memory of writing a story, I was like, I don't know, maybe grade one. Like, it was about a unicorn that died a tragic death. That's like my earliest memory of writing stories. And then it was something I did for my whole childhood into like adolescence. And then I kind of got this message. I don't know where it came from, if it was in me or if it was in like my surroundings. But when it came time to sort of like go away to college or like grow up, I had to like put the stories away. Like that was sort of in my mind, like I needed to not write anymore. I needed to not read the things I loved anymore. I needed to like read serious things. And the things I love were like genre fiction, like fantasy and sci-fi. And so that's what I did. I went away to university and I stopped writing. I stopped reading the things I loved. And then it came to a point where I I just was like not happy at university. I was constantly switching majors, and then I even switched schools, and then I dropped out of university and tried college. And I hated that too. And I remember like very vividly, there was this one day where I was working. I had an internship at this, what I thought was going to be my dream job. It was like this organization that I just loved and so badly wanted to work for. And it was the same kind of feeling. Like I got there and I was in this tiny little cubicle, overly air conditioning. So it was freezing cold in the middle of summer. No windows. I wasn't really sure what anyone actually did. Like they were working, but like, it didn't really seem like there was a lot going, like there was a lot happening or a lot getting done. And it was just like so depressing. And I remember like waking up sick one day and I was going to just work from home. And I kind of sat down with my tea and my laptop. And instead of like working, this like story came out. It was the weirdest experience. And it was like, this essentially what would probably be like a picture book about this girl who can consistently says yes to things that she doesn't actually want to say yes to until the day she learns to say no. And that was just like, it was like almost like a dam breaking. And it was like, why did I ever stop doing this? And from then on, I just like went back to writing. And I mean, I was still obviously working at the same time, but like starting to like take my writing seriously, like reclaim that sort of imaginative girl that I had once been. And that was kind of like the, I guess, the tipping point for me. Yeah.
It's interesting. You're talking about how you started as a kid. I have my very first complete short story was written sort of like that, as something to do on a rainy afternoon with a friend. Castor Glass Hypership Test Pilot was my first complete short story.
Oh, wow.
Story.
You remember. Yeah.
I was very much plugged into science fiction at the time. Okay. And still am, obviously. So yeah, it's, and it, you know, and then I wrote and wrote and wrote, but it was a long time before I really wrote in a way and, you know, started selling stuff. What was your first professional sale?
Yeah. So my first, it was a lot of like, a lot of rejection, probably the same story as you and everyone else in this industry, a ton of rejection. I actually had, I got an agent. I'm on my third agent. My first two agents left publishing, but my first agent, I snagged her with like a book, and a book that is like, that ended up becoming Edgewood, but wasn't Edgewood at the time. So Edgewood is the book before Heartless Entry. And I almost sold that book to an editor. There were two editors that were interested. And the one I worked really closely with her, and it was on spec. So I didn't have a contract or anything. We worked for a year together. I revised it three times for her. And eventually she kept taking it back to her editorial team, and they just kept saying no until they said no, this is not, not happening. And so, and then after that, my agent told me that the book had lost its heart after I had been working with it so closely with an editor, thinking that I was making it better. And then after that, my agent said she was leaving publishing, and then I was like back to like square one. I had
That sounds like a fun little while in there in your writing
career. Yeah, and so I definitely had like a dark night of the soul, like, is this meant for me? Like, am I meant to be writing stories for a living? All of that sort of thing. Anyways, I didn't give up. I kept going. And I ended up selling a book. It was The Last Namsar. It was my debut. And it was, I sold it in a 3-book deal to HarperCollins. And that was, 7-8 years ago now. So yeah, it worked out, but it was a lot of heartbreak on the way.
Well, and all of your books have been still in the sort of fantastical side of things.
Yes. Yeah. Fantasy is my first love, I would say.
Why do you think that is?
Oh, I think, I think for one thing, it was kind of my mirror as a kid. Like I saw in fantasy, I was growing up at a time where like YA wasn't quite a thing yet, but we had books like, Sabriel, depending on how you pronounce it, by Garth Nix.
Garth Nix, yeah. He's been on the podcast, actually.
Oh, amazing. I love Garth Nix. Oh my gosh, I just blanked. The Golden Compass by Philip Pullman. The Forgotten Beasts of Eld. Somehow that landed in my lap when I was like 12. And they were all about these women and girls that were like taking up spaces that were typically like historically like men's spaces, right? So like powerful wizards and like a girl who can bind the dead with bells and like all these things. And so it was like, I saw myself for the first time in fantasy, like where I wasn't seeing that in others. And so I think that was like the thing that drew me in. But I think now the thing that keeps me there is it's just like, it does metaphor really well. Like everything can be metaphor. Like my first book is about a dragon slayer and she lures dragons with least forbidden stories in order to slay them. And it's just like basically a metaphor for like the power of stories. And like you can do so many cool things in fantasy. I think that's why I like it, I think.
Well, let's talk about the latest one, Heartless Hunter, also known as The Crimson Moth in the UK. I guess that this would be a good place to give a synopsis of it without giving away what you don't want to give away.
Sure. So Heartless Hunter is a gender-swapped, Scarlet Pimpernel-inspired romantasy. I don't know if you've come across that term. So like a
Recently, I've seen it everywhere. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. And it's about basically a witch and a witch hunter who are pretending to court each other because the witch hunter has intel that the witch needs to save her fellow witches. So witches are hunted down and purged in this world. It's like a play on the French Revolution. And the witch hunter suspects this girl of being a witch, although he's not sure. And in particular, a vigilante witch who is rescuing witches from the purge. So yeah, that's the quickest pitch, I would say.
And this is the question that, you know, you're never supposed to ask, but I ask it anyway. Where did the idea come from? And in general, how do ideas for stories come to you?
Oh, gosh. The second question is harder to answer. The first question, where did the idea for this book come from? That is easy. I have all, like, ever since I was introduced to the Scarlet Pimpernel, I think I was in grade school, it has like lived in my imagination. Like there's something about that story that I love. And every 5 years or so, I go through like a binge, like I just am craving Scarlet Pimpernel. So I go through a binge of like the book and the movie and the film or the TV show. And there's a musical that I just discovered like a couple months ago. So like add that to my list of things.
I think there's a Wayne and Schuster skit as well. That's what I remember. So.
It's just been done in so many different ways. Like, it's just such a great story. Anyways, so I was hitting the end of one of these binges, like maybe 5 years ago. And I just like, I wasn't done. Like I was still craving more Pimpernel, but there wasn't really anything left. And so I was like, well, maybe I should write my own like inspired story that scratches my own itch, basically. So that's how it came about. That was the original.
Well, yeah, when I was reading the synopsis of the book before we started, that sounds a lot like the Scarlet Pimpernel. So there you go.
Good. Great. in terms of like ideas in general, though, it really depends. I don't have like a set answer for that, I wouldn't say.
So they can come from anywhere at any time without warning?
Yeah, pretty much.
I think my favorite description I've run into doing the podcast, I think it was David B. Coe, said that ideas are like neutrons. They're speeding through you all the time and you just have to be dense enough to capture a few of them. So
yeah, for sure. And like, you got to be able to keep up too, like write them all down before the next one hits, kind of. At least that's my experience.
I always like to talk a little bit about the process of writing. For you, once you have that initial idea, wherever it comes from, are you a detailed planner or more of a let's start writing and see what happens?
Mm-hmm. I'm much more of a plotter. Like, I just had a meeting yesterday with my editor, actually, trying to figure out when, like, the next book of mine is I'm going to hand it in. So because I'm a detailed plotter, I can usually give a pretty good estimate of when like my first draft will be done. So I always figure out character first, and then from that character plot and my outlines, I usually take about 4 to 6 weeks to outline. And that outline is like basically a quarter of a book. So about 175 to 100 pages, double spaced. So it's a lot of words, like 25,000 words.
Yeah, that's a major outline.
Yeah. So it's like, it's almost like a skeleton draft in a way. And then once I have that like solid, I feel good about like all of the pieces of the plot, then I can just kind of jump into drafting.
What's your actual writing like process? Are you certain hours every day? You're very rigid about that, or is it more of all over the place?
Yeah. So I have a small child. So
oh, well, there you go.
I have a toddler. And yeah. And so we intentionally moved back to Niagara after living away when she was born, because like the free childcare, being close to family. So I do have my stepmom and my dad, and my mom do help out with her. So I have days, like full days, 3 full days and a half, I would say, where I can just focus on writing. Ideally, like when I'm drafting, if I can get 5 to 6 hours every day just drafting, I can usually get a draft done in like 3 to 4 months. But often it's like you're piecing, for me anyway, like I'm waking up very early in the morning to write before anyone's awake. I'm writing after the kid goes to bed at night, those sorts of things. Like I'm mostly like piecing things together right now. So
once you have a draft with that amount of planning ahead of time, does that minimize the amount of rewriting you have to do after that initial draft?
Yeah. So this is one of the reasons that I moved to plotting. And I also just really enjoy plotting, where I didn't start out that way with my first book and my manuscripts before that. It was very much like a pantser, like you like write by the seat of your pants. But so The Last Samsara, for example, the Dragon Slayer book, I rewrote that book twice, like so totally brand new. There's like 3 iterations of that story that are totally different from each other. And each of those iterations went through various revisions, and I was pantsing my way through those. And so that was like 10 years, many, many, many rewrites to get to that final book. Whereas with The Heartless Hunter, the first draft is so similar to the book that's like on the shelf right now. And that's, for me, that's the difference between pantsing and plotting. There's not like one right way. And some, like I have a friend who pantses, and like that is just her way, and it will always be her way. So it's just like, it's just what works for you. But yeah, for me, it cuts out so many rewrites.
Yeah. Well, one of the things about this podcast is that there is no right way to do it. This is episode 160 something,
and everyone and will
yeah, there's something different from everybody. And I've had everybody from, I think it's Kendare Blake, very, you know, she just starts writing. And I often mention Peter V. Brett, who writes 150 page outlines and then fleshes them out. So, everything in between. So, once you get to the editorial end of things, what sorts of things do you find that your editors are there sort of, like in my case, when Sheila Gilbert was my editor at Jawbook, she's retired now, but my books got longer because she always wanted me to pump up things that I thought I had expressed, but I hadn't actually gotten on the page. Do you have a sort of a typical editorial response to work?
I would say shorter, like the opposite. I don't write super long. Like I have friends who write 130,000 words for a YA, that's very long. Mm-hmm. Like my books, Heartless Hunter and Rebel Witch, which is the sequel, were 110 and then 115. And we've like tried to get that as close to 100,000 as possible. It's more like we're not cutting out big chunks. It's more like, where can we like cut like little words or like, yeah. So it's I would say it's the opposite.
Sort of that honing.
Like yeah.
Polishing and sharpening everything.
Yeah.
Like a sword, one might think. And yeah. Now and of course you do write YA. Why are you drawn to writing for young readers? Even though I know that a lot of people who read YA are not necessarily young readers, but still, that is the target audience.
It is the target audience. Yeah. I would say I'm like in that sort of crossover zone where it's like teen /
new adult or something
like
that.
Moving into new adult. Yeah. Yeah. Especially Heartless Hunter is a more definitely older YA. I have tried to write adult books and they've just, and my agent and my editor were like, let's just age this down to YA. So I think it's just like my natural voice tends to be that more younger, not like middle grade young, but like sort of a younger adult or somebody sort of on the cusp of adulthood. I think that's just like my natural tone.
I've often said for myself that because I started writing as a young person, I wrote 3 novels in high school and all that sort of thing, that because I started writing as a young writer, that I grew up, but mostly my characters in my books didn't. So,
yeah, that's an interesting way to put it.
And I have written adult books, but the one came out a while ago, a World Shaper from Daw Books, then the character was 27 or something like that, and it got nominated for an award for a YA novel. So there must be something in my tone of voice that came across that way.
Well, even the question, like, what makes a YA novel? Like, nobody can really answer that question. Or what's the difference between a teen novel or a novel that gets shelved in the teen section and a novel that gets shelved in the adult section when the main character is like a teenager or whatever? It's like, it's a very difficult question to answer.
It has a lot to do with the publisher, I think. I have a trilogy, A Mask of Agrima, written as E.C. Blake. The character is a 15-year-old girl. She ages, I think she finally ages to 16 in the third book. Okay. But it was published in the adult market because they didn't have a YA line. So it's functionally a YA book, but it's not seen as that. So it's mostly publishing decisions, I think, that define what's YA and what isn't.
I think, too, there's like that coming of age story, too, tends to be, like, we see it more these days as like a YA.
So writing in that market, what kind of response have you had to your books, and have you been pleased? I mean, you're a New York Times bestseller and all that great stuff, but from the reader side of do you think your readers are getting out of the books what you would like them to be getting out of them?
I think so. I mean, I think Heartless Hunter in particular, my newest that just came out and hit the New York, that was like, I wasn't a New York Times bestseller before this book. So this book made me a New York Times bestseller, or a bestselling author, I guess. I would say, like, I feel the most pleased with this book based on reader responses. And the responses are like, I couldn't put this down. I read this in a day. I was up until 3 a.m. because I couldn't put it down. And especially, like, every once in a while, I'll get, like, a message from, like, a mom of, like, young kids being like, I was up until 3 a.m. reading this book. And it's like, as a mom of young kids, it's like, that is such a compliment because you can't afford to stay up till 3 a.m. reading a book. So, like, those kinds of things, like, make me feel like, okay, I did what I set out to do, which was like entertain and like help people escape, basically. So,
well, and now you've, I guess, injected the Scarlet Pimpernel into the minds, in a way, into the minds of a whole new generation. So, you should point them to the Scarlet Pimpernel after they've read your book. So,
there is, I do, the first person I shout out in my acknowledgments is Baroness Orzy, who wrote the Scarlet Pimpernel. So, hopefully, people make it that far.
One thing I noted off the top is that it has a different title and a different cover for the UK, Crimson Moth, and I guess that in Europe, perhaps, and I don't know what your division is there. Why is that?
So, okay, the original title was The Crimson Moth, or is The Crimson Moth, and that was supposed to be like a play, a little bit of a like a play on the Scarlet Pimpernel, Crimson Moth, Scarlet Pimpernel, but there's the magic system in the book, so they're witches and they cast spells using their blood or the blood of others. And whenever they cast a spell, there's like a signature that stays behind in the air. It's like a little kind of like fragile, like illusion that lasts for as long as the spell lasts and then it disappears. And every witch's signature is different and Runes is a crimson moth. So that's where the title came from. But my US publisher was like, no, we need something more commercial. So they went with Heartless Hunter. And then the UK was like, no, we're sticking with the Crimson Moth. And now there's a lot of people who are confused, but those two books are the same book, even though they have different titles, different covers. And actually that happened a little bit with my first book, The Last Namsara. It was Askari originally. I don't think either title is a good one because it's like, what is a Namsara? What is an Askari? It doesn't really tell you too much, but the international publishers went with Askari, and actually the UK and the US went with The Last Namsara.
Okay. You commented that this is a romantasy, and as I said, I've been seeing that term everywhere. The romance element, I mean, romance is like, of all the genres, romance is the biggest as far as drawing in readers. Do you think that this romance element is something that helps to enhance the success of this book, the fact that it is a romantasy?
Yeah, totally. I think, like, yes, I think the romance, I feel like there was like a dam that broke, I think, especially within fantasy. Like, obviously people have been reading romance for forever, and that has been one of, if not the biggest selling category of books for forever. But I feel like in fantasy, it's been very stuffy for a very long time, especially adult fantasy, where if you put romance in, then it's like not real fantasy, or like this is like girl fantasy or whatever. There's like, there is like a sort of elitism, at least that me and many others, like if you interviewed many other, especially YA fantasy authors, you would probably get this answer too. And so I think recently in the last few years, and I think it was, I don't know, my theory is that indie publishing did it. So like you have all these indie authors who are not breaking in, and they just published what they were wanting to publish and like going directly to the readers. A lot of that was very romantic fantasy. And I think that I think that's what like broke the dam. So it's becoming very, very in and there, accepted.
There was that period around the release of The Hunger Games when all of a sudden love triangles were everywhere.
Yeah. Well, everyone, that's like an age-old trope, I think, that everyone loves to hate but secretly loves.
Yeah, I might have committed that one myself once or twice. Like, but my daughter, who was a teenager at the time, she went through a period where she just was fed up with love triangles. So it's
yes, yeah. I think, I don't know, I have, yeah, it's like cliffhangers too. Everyone hates cliffhangers. But when you look at like how when you compare books that end on cliffhangers, like series, and how well they do, they tend to sell better because you do, like readers just want to keep going, right? So love triangles are one of those things that I think people say that they hate. But
yeah, I had a cliffhanger ending in the first draft of one of my books, and the editor said, "That's too much of a cliffhanger. We can't do that." So
yeah, it shouldn't be too much of a cliffhanger. There should be a resolution, but yeah.
And I think you said that there's already a sequel to this, or you're working on a sequel to this.
It's done. It's going to copy edits. But yeah, it comes out next February.
And what's its title?
The Rebel Witch. Or no, sorry, Rebel Witch in the US, The Rebel Witch in the UK.
So still have a different title. And is it going to carry on beyond that, or is it just a duology?
It's just a duology, yeah.
And it's all, well, obviously it's already written. I was going to say, is it all plotted out to the end? But apparently it is, yes.
Done.
And what else are you working on now?
So I just got the green light to start, well, I have to plot it first, but to start writing it's also a YA romantasy duology. And it's about I'm just wondering if I'm allowed to talk about it. I think I'm allowed to say it. I think so. So it's about a vampire princess, who is sort of trapped in this like terrifyingly corrupt family and like destined for this really horrible fate, and the forbidden romance she gets entangled in with her werewolf bodyguard, who has been secretly plotting the downfall of her and her family for centuries.
That's a good setup.
Yeah, and that one, it's interesting. Okay, to go back to like how you get your ideas, that one I have been thinking about this story, like it's sort of like a bodyguard romance, fantasy bodyguard romance, for a long time, but there was something that just wasn't working, so I just kind of kept putting it on the back burner. And then I went over to my friend's house, and she was like, "Would you ever write a vampire fantasy?" And I was like, "Oh no, I'm not really into vampires." And then I was like thinking about that conversation, just kept coming up in my head, and I was like, "Actually, maybe like." And so I kind of plugged in the vampire werewolf dynamic into this bodyguard fantasy. I was like, oh my goodness, like this is like the perfect combination. This is the thing I've been waiting for. So, I mean, ideas can come from anywhere, I think. Inspiration can come from anywhere.
I think it's a largely a matter of training your brain to think in those terms, so that if you're writing all the time, there's a part of your head back there that's always mulling over things and putting pieces together and seeing what fits. And then every once in a while, that part of your brain shoves something to the front part of your brain.
Yes.
You think, hey, I could write a book.
I think there's something to that.
And if people would like to keep up with what you're doing, where do they find you online?
So I have my website, I guess, is kristensicarelli.com. And then Kristen Sicarelli is my handle on Instagram, that's pretty much the only social media I'm on. And I also have a Substack, which I think is also kristensicarelli.com. Substack.kristensicarelli, something like that.
I'll find it.
Yeah, if you Google Kristen Sicarelli, you can probably find everything.
I usually put on the web page for this interview, because there's a web page for, as well as the YouTube video and everything else. I always put the social media link, so I will have those up there. If anybody comes across it, they'll be able to find you. So thanks so much for being on, Kristen. I enjoyed the chat. I hope you did as well.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was
and
lovely.
Best of luck with the sequel to, and then your vampire princess story.
I'm stoked about that one. I'm so excited to write it.
Bye for now.
Okay, see you.
And thanks again to Kristen for being a guest on this episode of The World Shapers. I enjoyed that conversation, and I hope you enjoyed listening to it. That's it for this time around. Just a few reminders. First of all, that you can find The World Shapers online at theworldshapers.com. You can also find it on Twitter at The World Shapers, sorry, X, and you can find it on Facebook at The World Shapers. You can find me, personally, at edwardwillett.com. You can find me on X at ewillett. You can find me on Instagram at edwardwillettauthor. You can find me on Facebook at edward.willett. And as you probably already have, if you're watching this, you can find me on YouTube at Edward Willett. One of the things you can also find on my YouTube channel is live walks, live streamed walks of me walking around Regina and talking as I walk. I've done those for, 3 years now, I guess I've been doing them. And I do it not quite every day, but multiple times a week. So check that out if that sort of thing interests you. Then, of course, there's Shadowpaw Press. Shadowpaw Press is my publishing company. You can find it at shadowpawpress.com. You can find it on X at Shadowpaw Press. You can find it on Instagram at Shadowpaw Press. And you can, did I mention Facebook? Shadowpaw Press. You probably guessed. And, of course, the other thing I want to mention just before I end is one more time to urge you to support the Shapers of Worlds Volume 5 Kickstarter, now running. Well, assuming you're watching this when it comes out, it may be over if you're watching it weeks down the road, but it started April 9th and will run for 30 days, and it's to raise $12,000 to fund the publication of Shapers of Worlds Volume 5, which is the next in this long-running series of anthologies. We just had number 4 came out, featuring authors who were guests on this podcast. So do please check that out. Again, it's at tinyurl.com/shapersofworlds5, or you can find it by going to Shadowpaw Press and clicking on the link there, or you can find it, actually you can find it on the World Shapers. There'll be a link there as well, worldshapers.com, or you can just go to Kickstarter and look it up. You can find it if you want to, and you can kick in and also take advantage of some great backers rewards. One I didn't mention up front is the possibility of having your name used as a character in one of the stories in the book or in a future work by the author. So that one's always a lot of fun, and I've incorporated a number of backers' names into my own stories for the anthology over the years. That's it for this episode of The World Shapers. I hope you enjoyed it, and of course, I will be back next week talking to somebody else about their latest book. That's it for now. Have a good day.
Mike Rowe here with a radical idea. If you want to see more companies make more things in this country, buy more things from more companies who make things in this country. I refer in this case to the incredible t-shirts, sweatshirts, blue jeans, and more made by my friends at American Giant. Everything American Giant makes is made in the United States. And right now, you can take 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com/Mike. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.